Canto 1, Chapter 4, Text 25. Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Founder Acharya of Iskcon. You can open the paragraph. Bhog offering. Stri Shudra Dvijabandhu Nam Trayina Shruti Gochara Karma Shreyasi Murhanam Shreya Evam Bhavadiha Iti Bharatam Akhyanam Kripaya Munina Kritam. Out of compassion, the great sage thought it wise that this word enable men to achieve the ultimate goal of life. Thus he compiled the great historical narration called the Mahabharata for women, laborers, and friends of the twice born. If we turn the AC off, it would be less noisy. Or is it possible to have it on in a low so it's less noisy? Or is it just the fan?
Yeah.
Well, that will also make a noise. Maybe have you close the door and turn on the aircon, that will be less noisy. I want less noise.
The
fan is also somewhat noisy. It also makes my voice worse. Purport. The friends of the twice-born families are those who are born in the families of Brahmanas, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, or the spiritually cultured families, but who themselves are not equal to their forefathers. Such descendants are not recognized as such for want of purificatory achievements. The purificatory activities begin even before the birth of a child, and the seed-giving reformatory process is called Garbhadhan Sanskar. Cell phones off. Please. One who has not undergone such Garbhadhan Sanskar, or spiritual family planning, is not accepted as being of an actual twice-born family. The Garbhadhan Sanskar is followed by other purificatory processes, out of which the sacred thread ceremony is one. This is performed at the time of spiritual initiation. After this particular sanskar, one is rightly called twice-born. One birth is calculated during the seed-giving sanskar, and the second birth is calculated at the time of spiritual initiation. One who has been able to undergo such important sanskars can be called a bona fide twice-born. If the father and the mother do not undertake the process of spiritual family planning and simply beget children out of passion only, their children are called dvijabandhus. These dvijabandhus are certainly not as intelligent as the children of the regular twice-born families. The dvijabandhus are classified with the shudras and the women class, who are by nature less intelligent. The shudras and the women class do not have to undergo any sanskar, save and except the ceremony of marriage. The less intelligent classes of men, namely women, shudras, and unqualified sons of the higher castes, are devoid of necessary qualifications to understand the purpose of the transcendental Vedas. For them, the Mahabharata was prepared. The purpose of the Mahabharata is to administer the purpose of the Vedas, and therefore within this Mahabharata, the summary Veda of Bhagavad Gita is placed. The less intelligent are more interested in stories than in philosophy, and therefore the philosophy of the Vedas in the form of the Bhagavad Gita is spoken by Lord Sri Krishna. Vyasadeva and Lord Krishna are both on the transcendental plane, and therefore they collaborated in doing good to the fallen souls of this age. The Bhagavad Gita is the essence of all Vedic knowledge. It is the first book of spiritual values, as the Upanishads are. The Vedanta philosophy is the subject matter for study by the spiritual graduates. Only the postgraduate spiritual student can enter into the spiritual or devotional service of the Lord. It is a great science, and the great professor is the Lord himself, in the form of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and persons who are empowered by him can initiate others in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Distinguishes human life from animal life is not simply that one has a differently constructed body, nor even that one is more intelligent than the animals, but the endeavor for spiritual understanding, that is the significant feature which distinguishes humans from animals. Otherwise, animals are also eating, sleeping. Animals are also eating and sleeping, having sex, and making arrangements for their defense, and also making arrangements to attack others. This is animal life. So a human being cannot be considered in a separate category from the animals if he only does these things. You may say, well, a human being is more intelligent. But then among the animals there are different gradations of intelligence. A dog is more intelligent than an ant. So why is it that a human should be considered very special if he's more intelligent than a dog? It's only a more developed level of intelligence. He can only be properly considered a human if he takes to God realization, spiritual realization. But spiritual realization is not simply a matter of imagination. It's not simply a matter of saying, I believe in God. When I say it's not simply a matter of imagination, that means that there are specific processes of spiritual realization which begin even before birth. In other words, those who are from what Prabhupada has described here as the spiritually cultured families, Brahmanas, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, known as Dvija. In these births there are two, in these families there are two births. So the first birth is given by the parents. When does that birth begin? The birth begins at the time of impregnation. So that is considered the first birth. Now, that should be done in such a manner, that should be arranged in such a manner, not simply that you drink a bottle of whiskey and then like that. You watch some movie and you have some video and then something happens. But the consciousness should be prepared for planting the seed in the field. In the Vedic literature, it is described that the father gives the seed and the mother is like the field. So the child is actually considered the child of the father more than the mother. The family line is calculated according to the fathers, not the mothers. So before impregnation, the consciousness should be prepared. And the time should be selected. What is the proper astrological time for impregnation? This is so as to attract a soul to that, to the body, a certain soul who will be suitable for spiritual cultivation, an elevated soul. Actually, everyone in this material world is degraded. One may be very proud, I'm a Brahmana. But actually, a Brahmana is also a degraded position, because every position in this material world is degraded. But it is relatively elevated to those who have no consciousness of a higher purpose of life. Brahmana means Brahma Janatiti Brahmana, one who knows what is the absolute truth. So the consciousness should be prepared, the proper time should be considered, blessings should be taken from seniors, elevated persons, permission should be taken from Guru. There are so many conditions in which controlled family, here Prabhupada says spiritual family planning, it is a controlled activity. Lust, that means uncontrolled. But spiritual family planning means that it's controlled. Now normally we think of family planning, we control birth by some artificial means, by taking some pills, there are various methods. But the control that is given here is that first of all the parents should be self-controlled. That means in control of the mind and senses, not simply that you put some control on the body so that the semen doesn't reach the ovum or some such thing. But the mind and senses should be controlled. Now, Prabhupada, he said that our devotees, they can't follow all these different processes, so at least they should chant 50 rounds of Hare Krishna mantra. Please, everyone, if you have a cell phone, which probably most of you do, kindly turn it off. Yeah. 50 rounds of the Hare Krishna mantra should be chanted in preparation for impregnation. But although that's the minimum, but that's actually in and of itself not enough. Because if you're watching TV and reading all useless novels and eating karmi food and then one day you chant 50 rounds, it's not going to have the same effect as if one is actually leading a controlled life. Modern life is based on don't control the senses. And spiritual life begins with the serious commitment to control the senses. So one cannot expect the child born will be very much of controlled senses or very elevated if the parents themselves are living like shudras or lower. The spiritual life means regulated life. So the first birth is given by the impregnation, and the second birth, generally we think there's the second birth means when the child comes from the womb. It's called garbhastha. First birth means to the child is within the womb, and the second bhumista, they come out onto the earth. But here Prabhupada has said that the first birth is by impregnation and the second birth is by samskar, the upanayanam samskar, by which one is to begin the study of the Vedas. Of course there are purificatory events and blessings from the brahmanas and so many things when a child is what we call born, comes from the womb of his mother. But from the spiritual point of view, the first birth is when there is the endeavor to have a spiritually inclined child. That means that by performing the Garbhadhan Sanskar, one is attempting to invoke the mercy of the Lord by which a child who is a living being who is ready to take human birth and who is spiritually elevated from a previous birth, so that such a child or such a person may become the child who takes birth
in the womb of the mother who is thus impregnated. So that is the first verse. And simply to be born like that, that is not in and of itself the guarantee of spiritual life, because training also has to be there. It may be that the child is from previous birth an exalted personality, but still training is required. So that training, of course, training that begins in cultured families, and that begins from the very beginning of life. Training in human behavior, what to do, what not to do. Just like, for instance, don't put your hand on your mouth here. If you read this book, My Memories of Srila Prabhupada, you'll find how I personally saw Prabhupada chastise someone for this. So actually this training should come at the very beginning of life. Just recently I saw, of course I used to see when I was living in Bangladesh, but one in Gujarat, one Bangladeshi village woman, I mean with her husband, is staying in the temple community which I was visiting. Now you may think Bangladeshi village woman, that's not very, that's not very cultured. You see, we're all educated, executive class. So Bangladeshi village woman, can't even sign her own name. So that's not very cultured. But actually, because the educated class, they've been educated as Paka Sahibs, the Indian educated class. So they've all lost their culture. Whereas the here we're talking about Sri Shudra Gija Dandhinam, the fallen classes of India, they're actually, because they didn't lose their culture so much, because they're not so educated. So they're more cultured, especially in Bengal. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, no, the Krishna's Kaviraja Goswami says, Paschina Loksha Bura Anacha. People on the western side of India, they're all fools and rascals who don't know how to behave properly. Actually, he's referring to Mathura. The culture appears, even at that time, the culture was not very prominent. So I told about this Bangladeshi village woman. So she brought in her child to see me, her young son. And the boy, he can't even, he's just beginning to walk, but he can't talk. And at that age, they start, the tendency is to put the hand in the mouth all the time. So she was all the time, I mean, like, maybe two or three times a minute. As soon as he put his hand to his mouth, she'd take it away. He'd put his hand to his mouth, she'd take it away. And I think she wasn't even thinking about it. It was almost like a factory machine. He was doing, and she, before he could get his hand, is now taking away. So this means even before he can talk, he's being trained. Now I may think, well, what's that? Because putting a hand in the mouth is dirty. Why dirty? Looks clean. You can lick your finger, it still looks clean. But actually it's dirty. It's contaminated. Because, as Prabhupada said, the mouth is more contaminated than the anus. And actually, if you consider, most of the diseases are orally transmitted. There are so many germs in the mouth. But those who are Shudras, they don't know this. They don't have training. Prabhupada speaks about the higher caste families. They're spiritually cultured. Why are they called spiritually cultured? Is it simply that by having a Kshatriya, Brahmana, or Vaishya name, some name like Vyas or Patel or Ranga, these are names of higher castes. Is it simply by having a name that you are considered spiritually cultured? No. Culture means activity, way of life. So the Shudras, they're simply meant for eating, drinking, sleeping. Drinking means not just water, all kinds of things, and illicit sex and all these kinds of things. Of course, even Shudras in traditional Indian culture, many of them were very cultured. But if someone from Shudra background, they're uncultured, then what can you expect? But the higher caste, they're supposed to uphold the values. So this kind of thing, putting the hand in the mouth, and it shouldn't be done, only when... Don't worry, I was going to say this anyway, not just because you happen to have your hand in your mouth. But I'm just giving it as an important example. That, see, you put your hand in the mouth, then it becomes contaminated. You don't think. And then you're going to pick up the Srimad Bhagavatam. Or you're going to go and do arati. But then actually everything you do becomes an offense. That's why the concept of untouchability was there. Because the Brahmins, they had to engage in puja. And contamination spreads by touch. If you touch a contaminated person, then you also become contaminated. So those who are not trained in this culture, they're all the time doing things. That I was saying, you should only put your hand in your mouth when you're eating or when you're brushing your teeth. That's all. If there's any other time, then you have to at least wash your hands. So they have this habit of chewing their nails, or they put their car keys in their mouth, and lick their finger and then turn the pages. So these are all very uncultured activities. These are basic things which are taught at home. These things should be taught at home. So many things. Bowing down before sadhus, bowing down before parents. Because nowadays the children don't want to respect their parents. And in most cases the parents are not worth respecting anyway. But actually the culture is that the parents, they should be so exalted in character that they impart the training to their children, and the children are very happy to bow down before their parents. The children are not rebelling, because the parents, they looked after the children with such concern and trained them so nicely that the children felt very thankful to their parents. So it's such a nice culture. All these things were, so many points were taught in the home, and then the children were sent away from home. Basic training, and then they're sent to the Gurukul, the house of the Guru, who trains them. What they may have had some initial idea from the parents, but the Guru trains thoroughly in spiritual knowledge. So that Upanayanam Samskar, that is the official ceremony by which one is admitted into the Gurukul for being trained as a brahmachari. So the Upanayanam Samskar, that can take place, that's generally only for the higher caste families. Why is that? Because within the family the training is supposed to be there. The Garbhatan Samskar is supposed to be there. And then the training is supposed to be there, so that when he goes to the place of the Guru, the child is already trained how to respect elders, how you don't put your hands in your mouth. The Guru shouldn't have to waste his time teaching all these things. Prabhupada, of course, used to teach, and nowadays mostly no one teaches, because I don't know why they don't bother to teach all these things. But actually all these things, they should be understood. This is a prerequisite for understanding Vedic knowledge. Therefore the Vedic knowledge is not taught to Stri, Shudra, Dvijabandhu, or persons who don't have this culture. The Veda means the Mool Vedas. They're not taught these things. Of course women in the higher caste families, they also have to have this culture, because they're the first gurus. First, you also have your hand in your mouth. So kindly, you can also wash it. Don't put it anywhere else in the meantime. Of course, mostly people live anyway, there are so many things. At least we can try and get one thing right. And so women, they are the first gurus for their children. They teach them all these things. Don't put your hand in your mouth. Respect elders, how to eat with your right hand, not with your left hand. So many important things, so many important things they teach in the home. But because their duty is to look after children, which is so important. Nowadays, mostly women, they have careers, and then the children are just a disturbance in the career. But actually, by natural function, the women, they're having a child every year or 15 months, something like that. And then they have to look after them. So they don't have, one thing is they don't have time for studying the Vedas, all these things. Also, by the natural function, women, they can start to give birth 13, 14, 15 years old. So that natural function is there. And then they have to look after the children and train them as they have been trained and as they continue to be trained within the family. So they don't study the Vedas. They may be cultured in a certain way, they're from a cultured family, but they don't study the Vedas. But they, for women, the only sanskar is the vivaha sanskar, by which they are married, and their function is to assist the husband, who is engaged. His duty is to maintain the family and to engage in, to be the guru for the family, spiritual guide. And the wife has her role to assist. And according to Vyasadeva, they are more fortunate than men because their path is easier. They don't have to undergo all the different Vedic processes. Simply by assisting their husband, they attain the same result as he does. So in this way, one is twice born. He is twice born by first birth is through the Garbhadhan Samskar, and the second birth is by Upanayanam Samskar. Nowadays, these things are not going on, or they may be going on generally as a formality. Still in the families of those who have the names of Brahmanas, they make a big function of Upanayanam Samskar, which is absolutely meaningless. Because in the first place they never perform the Garbhadhan Samskar, which means that that's stated by Manu, I believe, that in higher caste families, where if the Garbhadhan Samskar is not performed even once, and the child is born without that Garbhadhan Samskar, then the whole family is converted to Shudras. By that negligence, they're converted to Shudras. So practically you see what is the difference between nowadays between Brahmin and non-Brahmin? There's no difference. Only the name. Brahmanas, they're not performing brahminical duties. They're mostly performing shudra duty, which is they're employed by somebody. Or they may have their own business, which is, at the best you could call that vaishya duty. Although actually when it's said that vaishyas in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says the duty of the vaishya is vanijya. One of the duties is trade. But all this modern business, that's not the business of a cultured vaishya. All this cheating business and manufacturing chewing gum and plastic ducks and all kinds of useless things. Some kind of culture may be going on in their families. And often we see that from the material point of view, also people born in Brahmana families are quite intelligent. But they shouldn't be proud, I am a Brahmana, because you're not a Brahmana. According to the actual definition given in Shastra, you are a Shudra. To call a Shudra would be a compliment, actually, because even to be a Shudra in Vedic culture, that so many restrictions are there. Otherwise, if you don't follow any restrictions, then you are antyaja. Then you are not part of the Varnashram system at all. You are born outside it. Then you are chandal, lecha, yavan, so many things. So practically, to call someone a shudra nowadays, that is actually a compliment. Because people, they're not even on that level. The way people are living, they're living like lecha, chandala, yavan, rakshas, asur, and still they're very proud. I am a brahmana. Of course, in the Varaha Puran, that is stated that in the Kali Yuga, many persons born in Brahmana families, they'll actually be of Rakshasa quality. What is that verse? Rakshasa? I can't remember the verse now. That many persons of very degraded and rascal mentality will be born in Brahmana families and will, on the plea of being a Brahmana, simply oppress and exploit others. So therefore, in Kali Yuga, if there is at all to be spiritual life, then it can't be exactly according to the traditional Vedic system. Because by the nature of Kali Yuga, that system is broken down. It's not possible to properly follow the Varnashram system. Of course, Prabhupada wanted to institute that as far as it is possible. Please don't use the Srimad Bhagavatam to lean on when you're writing. There are many, many fine points. It may seem troublesome to be taught them in your later life, but we should learn these things so that we can serve Krishna more properly. Krishna consciousness means we should be conscientious. We should know what to do, what not to do. Otherwise, pravittim cha, nivrittim cha, janana vidu asuraha. Those who do not know what to do and what not to do, they're actually counted among the demons. So we have to learn this Vaishnava culture. Otherwise, how can you be a Vaishnava if we have the culture of the demons? We have to learn how to live as a Vaishnava, behave as a Vaishnava. There are many details because we have to satisfy Krishna. And to satisfy Krishna, we have to know what is required to do to satisfy him. So unfortunately that training isn't there. Therefore Prabhupada, he wrote that in Kali Yuga there are no brahmanas. There are people who are posing as brahmanas, but that simply makes the situation more confused. Real brahmanas means those who are actually spiritual guides to society, not simply by precept, not just by talking, but by their very example. In their lives, they themselves are absorbed in Krishna bhakti and teach that to others. So Prabhupada said it is an emergency because there are no brahmanas in human society, therefore it's like a body without a head. So in this situation, although traditionally brahmanas would come from the cultured families, not necessarily that one had to be born in a brahmin family to be a brahmana, but generally it was. But Prabhupada said now that system is broken down. The Shokra Parampara is broken down. So therefore it is required to establish new Brahmanas or real Brahmanas by training even from the ranks of the outcasts. Anyone can be trained. Yata kanchana samyati kaunsyam rasa vidhanataha. This Sanatana Goswami gives the example that there is a metal, bell metal, which can, by an alchemical process, be converted into gold. In other words, by a certain process, an inferior quality metal can be transformed into the highest quality, namely gold. So in the same way, tata diksha vidhanena dvijatvam jayate nam. So in the same way, by the process of diksha, anyone from any background can be made into a dvija. By the pancharatrik vidhi, not the Vedic vidhi. Vedic vidhi means that one should have garbhadham samskar from properly qualified parents, and then take the upanayanam samskar and go to the gurukul. That is Vedic vidhi, which is not possible to be followed in the present day, because where are the properly cultured parents in the first place? They don't exist. Kalo shudra sambhavat. Everyone in Kali Yuga is simply born as a shudra. But by the pancharatrik vidhi, even those who are not born in the proper way or brought up in the proper way, they can take pancharatrik diksha. And by this process of diksha, pancharatrik means that pancharatras, they are part of the Vedic literature, not exactly the original Vedas, but they serve the same purpose of the Vedas, and they give directions for purification for people in Kali Yuga. So by the process of diksha, one can be elevated to the platform of a dvija, which means one who is under the process of training for spiritual life. So this is the real meaning of diksha. Divya jnanam yato dadya kurvat papasya samshayam tata diksha vidhanena kovidas tattva samshayam. Diksha, it doesn't mean simply sitting in a ceremony. But real diksha means to surrender oneself to Krishna through the agency of the Guru and be trained in spiritual knowledge. The foremost duty of the Guru is to impart spiritual knowledge to the disciple by which he can become purified. Our situation is impure because we are in ignorance. Therefore, ajnanatimirandhasya jnanam jana shalakaya chakshiran nilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. We offer obeisances to the Guru. Why? Because he gives spiritual knowledge. So, Sukaka Krishna Prabhu was suggesting that by touching these certificates, people could be benefited. So there may be some benefit there. But it's not that simply a guru goes around touching people or things and giving them so-called spiritual electric shocks. There may be, there is the case of that one follower of Chaitanya, actually Nityananda Prabhu, Abhiram Thakur, who used to beat people, or not exactly beat, but he would lash them with the Jai Mangal, the whip, by which they would, just by the touch, they would become spiritually ecstatic. So that was a special dispensation, unusual. But the general process is that one has to hear very carefully. I also say that everyone is requesting everyone to listen very carefully, because it is by hearing repeatedly the messages of Krishna from a guru, means the guru means who is coming in parampara and teaches according to parampara, and is himself advanced in realization of the messages of parampara by hearing the messages of the Bhagavatam in this manner, then gradually by hearing in this way, one can become fully purified and fully Krishna conscious. However, Diksha is not given immediately. Some initial training should be there. It has to be seen that the person who is supposed to take Diksha, the would-be disciple, is actually being trained sufficiently so that they can hear. Disciple has to hear the Guru speak. What are the instructions of Gita and Bhagavatam? So one has to be ready to hear, should be at least situated in goodness to some extent. Otherwise, a person who is too much affected by the modes of passion and ignorance, they cannot sit and listen. If one is infected by the mode of ignorance, he will simply sleep during the lecture of the Guru. And one who is too much in the mode of passion, they either they can't sit peacefully and listen, or they may sit and they'll be fiddling with their fingers, or their mind is wandering, because the mind is not peaceful enough to hear properly. So one has to be ready to hear. Without hearing, one cannot properly be purified. One cannot, the intelligence cannot grasp the messages which are being given. Intelligence is required, that is there in the human form of life. But that intelligence, it's not simply a matter of academic intelligence that one can understand the messages of Bhagavatam. But by purified intelligence, by purification of intelligence, one can understand. Now, Vyasadeva, he compiles the Vedic literature for the Kali Yuga. At the end of every Dwarpa Yuga, there is a different personality takes the role of Vyas. The Vyas who compiled the Vedas previous to this Kali Yuga, and who is still living at Bhadarika Ashram. Vyasa is one of the Chiranjeevis. He's still living there. But he's done his basic job for this Kali Yuga. So this particular Vyasa is a Shakti Avesha avatar of the Lord by the name of Krishna Dvaipayana. So his job is to compile the Vedas, edit them, classify them. Previously the Vedas, they are not written down. They are called Shruti. Simply one hears and remembers. That is the qualification of those who are actually intelligent. But in Kali Yuga, all the qualities of human beings are diminished, including Smriti Shakti, the ability to remember. And what to speak of the ability to remember, the ability to understand, is also very poor. So Vyas compiled the Vedas, but actually the Vedas, the original Vedas, are not as important as the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. They are the actually more important message of the Vedas. The Vedas are Taigunya Vishaya Veda. They are mostly, at least superficially, concerned with activities for elevation to higher planets. Which means that it's within the modes of material nature. That is called trivargic. The Vedas, they're mostly concerned with dharma, artha, and kama. And when one comes to the Jnanakanda section of the Vedas, then that means one is interested in moksha, when one comes to study the Upanishads. So Vyasadeva compiled all the Vedas, he edited, put into various books. Previously they were not written down. But it required to be written down so that the record is there, because Kali Yuga people may want to alter it by making interpolations, and also because people can't remember, and it needs to be written down. So he compiled the Vedas and the Upanishads, and then he compiled the Mahabharata, which is particularly for Stri, Shudra and Vijabandhu, for women, Shudras, and those who are within the Vedic culture but not very elevated. And Dvijabandhu, they're also Shudras, but it means that they are known as members of the higher caste by birth, although by activities they are simply Shudra, fallen members of previously elevated families. So he compiled the Mahabharata for them because it's interesting. It's a story. It's a high, very interesting story. But actually the purpose of the Mahabharata is to come to hear Bhagavad Gita. There are many important instructions in Mahabharata, but for actual spiritual elevation, one has to hear Bhagavad Gita. So that is compiled for less intelligent people. Of course, everyone in Kali Yuga is less intelligent. But even Bhagavad Gita in one lecture, of course, generally we praise Bhagavad Gita. We should praise Bhagavad Gita. It's spoken by Krishna himself. Swayam Padmanabhasya Mukha Padmanabhasya Srita. It's direct. The Vedas, they emanate from the breathing of Narayana. But Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has personally and directly spoken the Bhagavad Gita. But in one lecture, Prabhupada was saying that the Gita, even that, will not help people very much. Of course, Bhagavad Gita helps us in all ways. But in Bhagavad Gita, the actual message of the Vedas, which is hardly stated in the Vedas themselves, and in Bhagavad Gita it's stated, but it's not very clearly and straightforwardly and forcefully presented, is that the real goal of life is prema pumartho maham pancham purushartha. The four purusharthas, or goals of life, or means. Artha has different meanings. The word has different meanings. So the four goals of life for those in Vedic culture are dharma, artha, kama and moksha. But Srimad Bhagavatam begins with dharma, dharma projita kaitava atra, with rejecting materialistic religion. So dharma, artha, kama and moksha, artha, kama and moksha, they spring all from dharma. But in Srimad Bhagavatam, which is Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite, it is compiled by Vyasadeva, who compiled all the Vedas. And he himself states that whatever else I compiled, it is simply cheating religion. It is a kind of cheating. Cheating because it's presenting to people, you follow this, you follow these rules of dharma, and you can enjoy in the heavenly planets. So it's cheating. It's like giving a child some sugar candy. Yeah, open your mouth, I'll put in the sugar candy. So you put it in, and while the mouth is still open, you put some bitter medicine. So the purpose is to give him the medicine, not the sweet. But because if you say, open your mouth, I'll give bitter medicine, he won't open it. Therefore you give the sugar candy. It's to cheat him for his own benefit. But if he's very supposedly clever, he'll take the sugar candy and quickly close his mouth and you can't put in the medicine. So actually the Vedic knowledge is meant for bringing us to our real purushartha, param purushartha, which is prema pumartho maham, the real goal of the Vedas, which is hardly explicitly stated in the Vedas, is to develop love of Krishna, and is not even stated very explicitly in Gita. It's there, but not very straightforwardly. Even Krishna finishes up by saying, surrender to me, not love me. He says, become my devotee, then you surrender to me. But he doesn't very explicitly state that actually you're meant to love me. So mostly the followers of the Vedas, they're very expert in opening their mouth and closing it again. In other words, following the Vedic directions for sense gratification or even for moksha and avoiding Krishna because they're envious of Krishna. So therefore Vyasadeva, we find in this chapter, it's described how he was feeling morose. Feeling morose? He was feeling morose because he had compiled all the Vedic literatures which are meant to lead up to the point of describing how you should surrender to Krishna and love him and enter into love with him, but he hadn't done that. He did everything else, but then what did he compile all the Vedas for? So that everyone could eventually come. You've been through Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, now come to love of Krishna. So he did all the preparatory work, and then the real thing he was supposed to do, he didn't do. It's just like if someone invite, now please come, I've made one palatial residence. So you come in, someone invites you, let's walk in and see all. So you come in through nice gates with guards and nice gardens and hedges and ponds, and you go around gradually, and then you come to a big blank empty space. The walkway and the gardens are supposed to be the approach to the mansion. But if you simply have walkway and gardens and gates and ponds, and then there's no building, then it's not a residence. The whole point is the gardens are supposed to be an approach to and a decoration to the building. So it, like that, if you make all the approach, but then you don't, then you see, you make a beautiful garden, and then you sleep outside at night, and you do your cooking like the mazdoors in India who are working on the building sites. They do their cooking, everything outside. They live, eat, sleep, procreate, everything they do right on the building site. They live outside. So if you have a beautiful approach road and gardens and all this, and then in the middle of it you're living in an empty space and sleeping outside and cooking outside, it doesn't make sense. So in the same way Vyas, he had compiled all the different Vedic literatures, but the whole point of it, which is to bring us to pure Krishna consciousness, he hadn't done that. Therefore he was feeling morose. So even Vyas needs a guru. He had to have Narad come and tell him. So he was feeling morose because he hadn't delineated that, which is delineated in Srimad Bhagavatam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is the Acharya, he is the Supreme Lord himself, he is the Acharya of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. He gave the idea, actually the idea was first given by Madhavendra Puri, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Madhavendra Puri gave the idea of the topmost love of Krishna, the one simply loves Krishna without any personal desire. Even without any personal spiritual desire, that I will sarlok, what is that? Sarlokya samipya sarshti sarupya. These four kinds of spiritual liberations for devotees, living on the same planet as the Lord, having the same opulence as the Lord, living close to the Lord, or having the same form as the Lord. But a devotee, he doesn't desire even this. He desires simply, let me love Krishna, and if Krishna wants to give me some benediction, he can. If he doesn't, that's up to him. Complete surrender, complete love for Krishna. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to teach this. Now the general convention is that the head or the founder of a sampradaya, a Vedic sampradaya, he has to write a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. Because Vedanta Sutra, that is Brahma Sutra, that is giving knowledge, spiritual knowledge. But because it's in sutra form, sutra means very concise form, actually what the message of it is somewhat hidden. So therefore, any Vaishnava or non-Vaishnava, Vedic Sampradaya, that the founder of that, they have to give a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra with all quotations from the Upanishads to explain their understanding, or what they call their Siddhanta. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't do this, because he accepted the Srimad Bhagavatam as the natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra by the author himself. Because Vyasadeva, he compiled the Brahma Sutra. But in that, actually it's clear. If our intelligence is clear, then we can clearly understand that in the Vedanta Sutra, it is only teaching Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But because our intelligence is not clear, therefore we don't understand. Therefore, to explain that, Srila Vyasadeva compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam. But then we also can't understand that, so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to teach. Other Vaishnava Acharyas also taught on the basis of Srimad Bhagavatam. But actually, what is the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam? Even other Vaishnava Acharyas, they couldn't find that. Because even in Srimad Bhagavatam, which clearly explains Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But who is Krishna? What is the very nature of Krishna by which we love him? We're speaking of love of Krishna as the topmost goal of life. Then why should we love Krishna? You can also love your dog and your cat and your wife and your children and your country. Why love Krishna? Why should we say to love Krishna? What's so special about Krishna that we should love him? So Srimad Bhagavatam explains what is so wonderful about Krishna, how he is so lovable. What are his transcendental qualities which make him Krishna all attractive? But what is the nature of love of Krishna? That is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam. But the very embodiment of love of Krishna, whose one name is Rasa Murti, who is the embodiment of Premaras, loving Krishna, that is Srimati Radharani. But you won't find her name even directly in Bhagavatam, only indicated. Anaya Radhita Anunam Bhagavan Ishvaro Harihi. It's mentioned that she who worships the Lord in the best possible way. But the name is not directly given. It's also a secret. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to teach this particular point. Anarpita charing chirat karunya avatirnu kalo samapiyatam unatajvala rasa swabhakti shriyam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to teach that which no one had taught before. That which is the topmost, resplendent love for who? For himself, because he is Krishna. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nahayam. Actually, if we are to understand Krishna intimately, and love means intimate. Love means intimacy. So who can teach on the most intimate level? They are teaching the highest love. Actually, love is not something to be taught. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem Shadu Kabuna Shabanadi Shuddha Chitti Kaliyudha. Love for Krishna is dormant within the hearts of every living being. And by the process of sadhana bhakti, beginning with hearing from the proper source, then that love for Krishna is reawakened. It is dormant within our hearts. So when we say that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches love of Krishna, rather he teaches the process by which we can reawaken our love for him. But then love, if we're actually going to speak of love, there are different levels. And different Vaishnava Acharyas, they have taught love of Krishna on different levels. But only Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught that he is Radha Krishna. He is Krishna with the sentiment and bodily lustre of Radharani. that Radha Bhavat Yuti Suvalitam Nomi Krishna Swarupam. He is Krishna. But with the sentiment and bodily color of Radharani. Today is Jagannath Mishra Mahotsav.